welcome back to Sorkin Series. Tonight we're going to be talking about episodes 3 and 4. It's A Proportional Response and 5 Votes Down. How's everybody doing? How are you doing, Mirma, Tarek?
Really good. I'm woken up now. I have coffee, so it's like, yeah.
Yeah, just finished reading The Casual Vacancy, so I'll try and get out of that mind frame, get into, like, West Wing zone.
Yeah, I just got my copy this morning on my Kindle, so I'll be scratching away at it a little bit all day during my break at work and whatnot. I'm excited. I can't wait.
Yeah.
I hate you for two reasons, Marma. One, you're in the future. Two, you can read really fast. I'd probably take, like, 2 days to read The Casual Vacancy.
Oh, no, it doesn't take that long. Actually, a girl asked me on Twitter just before we were recording, I think. She was like, how long did it take you to read it? And because I measure everything in, like, cups of tea, I was like, 3 cups of tea. Or 4 hours. Like, that's how I... If people are following me on Twitter, they'll see when I'm editing Sorkin Series, because I'm always, like, I measured in, like, my cups of tea, how many cups of tea it's taken me to edit. Like, oh, and, like, cup of tea number 8. It's when you know it's not going well.
Oh, I love it. Is there any newsroom news?
Yeah, there's a bit of news. I kind of feel like my news segment needs a title. Like, it could be, like, Marima's News Night or something, but funnier, hopefully funnier. So I'll work on that. I'll keep you guys posted.
Yeah, and if anyone has any suggestions, feel free to tweet it at us at Sorkin Series or email it to us at sorkinseries@hyperbold.com, or you can always put it in the comments at the bottom of the post from the episode.
Yeah, we need a lot of suggestions, so keep them coming.
Yeah, I mean, obviously this is essential to the quality of the show, so this is really important. Yeah. So first up, we have some, like, general Aaron Sorkin news. He did an interview where he talked mainly about the newsroom ratings, and it was kind of interesting because he was talking about how the changes in TV have affected, like, viewership, and talking about, you know, people watching things online on, like, HBO Go, that kind of thing. And also discussing the differences between, like, working on stage versus working on TV, and how different it is to approach a medium where you can't see the audience experiencing it straight away. I don't know. I thought that was really interesting. Like, do you guys think he would approach it really differently or kind of the same?
That is a really interesting, like, idea for him. I know since he's a playwright, kind of a playwright first and a screenwriter second, like, he started as a playwright. I'm sure it's got to be quite the adjustment to write something and have it filmed and not have any idea how people are going to respond until it's, like, released, you know what I mean? Rather than it being on stage and, like, you can do, like, a, you know, a screener performance or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, that just seems like it would take some adjustment.
Yeah, and I think he was saying also, like, it's kind of hard to gauge what an audience thinks when it's also broken up when they're watching it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, it's just interesting to think about how he kind of approaches it, because it's very much his baby, you know. Anyway, speaking of the stage, we've got another story. Thomas Sadowski is back on stage in LA. So a little bit of a commute for me, but you guys should check it out. He's going to be in the world premiere of Build, which is a 3-person play. And it's running from October 9 to November 18. So if we have any listeners in that area, you know, you can, like, check it out and let us know. I don't know, I would be pretty keen to see some of these actors on stage. It kind of reminds us how they're basically stage actors. They all started out on stage, which is interesting. I would be definitely keen to see some Thomas Sadowski. I don't know if Tarek would be such a big fan. Can you separate him from Don? Or...
Get him away from me. No.
He's not his character. That's not fair.
Okay, no. I don't know. Maybe he has this face that I just don't like.
Oh.
I just don't like his face.
Okay.
Like Jim's face. I love his face.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
Wow. You might have mentioned that once or 1,000 times.
Well, yeah. Ever since that news article about Allison Janney, I really just want to see John Gallagher Jr. and Allison Janney in something together. Like, I just can't give it up. I think it'd be fantastic.
Oh, well, okay. I'm going to take that segue. What a beautiful segue. It's like I planned it. So this week, there was also an unofficial, I'm doing that air quotes thing, guys. We should really make this a video podcast. An unofficial West Wing reunion, which was exciting. It was actually a campaign ad for Bridget Mary McCormack, who is a candidate for Michigan Supreme Court. Kristen, you might recognize that name because her sister, Mary McCormack, I know, confusing. She played Kate Harper in the later seasons, which is weird that they basically are called the same thing. So Tarika, basically one of the actresses that is in the sixth and seventh series of West Wing? Her sister is like running for Supreme Court, so she got all of the West Wing cast together to like promote her.
Yeah, people something. Might know her. She did a series for USA. I can't think of what the name of it is now. But yeah. She did she had a couple of different shows on USA. You probably recognize her face from.
That's such a crazy good idea for like a political campaign. Yeah. Oh, let's get a show that everyone freaking loves and reunite them for a commercial.
Seriously. So, I mean, basically everyone returned, which is kind of amazing, except for Rob Lowe. Which I guess shows he really didn't like any of them, or maybe he just doesn't agree with the politics. I think the others are all pretty like openly liberal leaning, especially like Martin Sheen, who's been arrested like 1,000 times. But you know, maybe Rob Lowe just wasn't, he didn't think he should do it if he wasn't getting paid or something. Anyway, so like Sorkin obviously didn't write it. It's not like the most well-scripted thing you'll ever see. But I have to say, I basically screamed when I saw that they'd done it, because I was so excited. And then I kind of screamed again when I saw what Bradley Whitford looks like these days, and my little heart just kind of broke, because time has not been kind to Josh. Just really hasn't. I was like, oh, honey, you definitely need a larger shirt size than what you're wearing.
I love every time that they do anything like this. Like, they get together for a commercial or for something every so often, and Josh Molina always gets on Twitter and is like, starts causing trouble. Like, starts quoting things like, oh, you know, here's the West Wing movie, blah, blah, blah. Like, he always starts stuff. And then Dule gets on and is like, stop causing trouble.
Yeah, yeah. Josh, he's such a troll, isn't he? He's always on there and he's like, yeah, he's like, West Wing movie? And then, like, uploads his little, like, Twitter photo and everyone goes crazy. Then it's like, really, no. But, yeah, I mean, Allison Janney is like a walking advertisement for, like, any aging product that ever exists. So, you know, I mean, she looks the same. Like, she looks damn good.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, I can't get over it. I mean, especially compared to the rest, who all look like they've aged about 20 years. how appropriate. Anyway, with that beautiful West Wing segue, oh, it's so good. It's working out so well. we can jump into the episodes for this week. I guess that's basically all we've got for news.
I like these a lot better than I liked last week's.
Yeah? You're getting more into it now?
Yeah. I found myself actually looking forward to watching episodes. Or at least I was looking forward to the first episode. Because I was telling this to Marma. I need to stop watching this really late at night, the night before we record at 6 a.m. Because I watched the first episode. I was like, oh, that's great. And I'm like, crap, now I have to watch the second episode. But I did like it, so it's good.
Well, you like getting used to the characters and probably like learning who people actually are, which helps. Yep.
I love, what's his name? I forgot his name already. God damn it. Sam. I love Sam.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I cannot stand Sam. Oh, well, you might have noticed from the show notes. I can't stand Sam in this first episode especially.
I was like, wow, Marima is not on the Sam train.
I put in a whole category called Sam is a jerk.
Because my first response was, he's not a jerk.
He so is. In this first episode, in a proportional response, he totally is. But, well, anyway, we'll get to that.
Yeah, we'll get there. Yeah. So, episode 3 is entitled A Proportional Response. It aired originally on October 6th, 1999. Which, wow, was a long time ago. It dawns on me how long ago that really was. Written by Aaron Sorkin and directed by Mark Buckland. So the main plot of this episode revolves around Bartlett's military response to the plane being shot down in post hoc ergo propter hoc. What do you guys think about like this whole storyline, like? How did you guys feel about it?
I thought it was a really appropriate way to kind of convey a president's first military approach, or what's the word I'm looking for?
Like action? I don't know.
Action, yeah. I thought it was a really proper way to portray a president's first military action, or like their first time really having to deal with this stuff. Because I feel like I have no idea what goes on in the White House or how presidents actually feel about this stuff, but I feel like it was a realistic approach. Like, he's overreacting to them shooting down a plane. Like, when they said that it was like $1,000 punishment or a $50,000 punishment for like a $50 crime. Like, I think that was completely appropriate. Like, it was partially just because he was his doctor and he was really starting to like him and he was about to bring him on full time, and then the guy dies. Like, I feel like it's a natural reaction, but as a president, he really just took it over the top. And I completely agree with the way that they approached everything. And as soon as they started talking about, like, the different ways that they're going to approach this, like bombing the airport, I was like, holy shit, that's too much.
Yeah, and it shows his, like, obvious discomfort with the military. Like, we see at the end of last episode, he's like, I'm going to blow him off the face of the earth. And then this episode, he's like, yeah, guys, let's go blow people up. And they're like, you can't really do that. Like, that's not really how it works.
Yeah, you know, I love, and like, the random, yeah. It's one of the chiefs, I forget who it was, says, Mr. President, are you suggesting that we carpet bomb Damascus? And just the way he says it just cracks me up every time.
Yeah, and I think it's an interesting dynamic as well, because, like, the president is not comfortable with, like, the chiefs and, you know, all of the military commanders and stuff. He doesn't feel like that's his area. And you see a lot in this episode, he's kind of looking to Leo for guidance, or, you know, Leo is offering him guidance that he's not, you know, necessarily seeking out. But you also see the chiefs, like, on their side, they're not super comfortable with him either, because he's a new president, and they have, like, they make a point of saying, like, well, they've been here working with all the other presidents. Like, this is just the new guy just coming in, you know.
And for those that might not have seen the series, you'll get more about Leo, but he was in the military in Vietnam, and so he kind of is, he's the experience to Bartlett's inexperience. So
yeah,
Bartlett looks to him for advice a lot of the time.
Exactly. And I think it was like an interesting way to kind of frame the whole episode as well, because, like, it really easily draws in the other more, like, personal plots, the one-on-one things that we get, because it's like those things still matter in the context of, like, this huge military operation and, like, the president's internal conflict and, you know, troubles that he's having dealing with it himself and deciding what to do. Like, it doesn't mean that the smaller things matter less. And, like, I kind of think that, like, Sorkin makes a point of that, of, like, bringing out all of these different things. Like, we get, you know, the introduction of Charlie and, like, some racial issues, and we kind of get Sam's, like, integrity issues and these kinds of things, and it's all part of the same thing. Like, does that make sense? I don't know if I phrase that very well, but
no, that
that's
makes sense.
That's my stream of consciousness, you know.
So moving on from there, because that's pretty much what we see. We see the president, like, freak out, and then he gets brought back down, and you know, he talks to Fitzwallace about it, and Fitzwallace kind of, you know, makes it make sense to him, which I love Fitzwallace. What do you guys think of him?
Oh, he's such a great character.
Yeah.
Like, I love the way that they introduced him in this episode as if he's always been there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? It's so great. Like, you don't feel like, oh, it's a new guy I need to know. You're just like, oh, yeah, that's the Joint Chief. Like, he's in charge of the military. Like, he's always been here.
He kind of gives Bartlett that out. Like, I've seen a lot of guys go through this, and, you know, you're okay. Like, you're doing fine. And I love that he kind of gives that hint, like, I've been here forever. I know how this goes.
Fitzwallace is played by John Amos. And we also see the introduction of, how do you say his name? Jewel, how do you say it?
Jewel.
Yeah, I can't say that. I can't say use like that.
Can we just say Charlie?
Yeah, but I want to say his name.
Yeah, it's Jewel Hill. Which,
yeah, okay.
I know from Psych and other things since then.
Oh, Psych's
yeah,
from.
Christina,
oh my God.
Freaked
this is
out. I was like,
he got his start, really. This is
I was like staring at him.
We should say we're like we missed saying this at the start, but we're really sorry Christina couldn't be on this episode, but she has like a lot of exams and like stress and everything. But the first thing she said when she watched this was like, oh my God, the guy from Psych, because she loves that show. So yeah, she's probably like kicking herself for missing this. But yeah, so Charlie is like introduced, and the reason that they were brought in this episode was the NAACP kind of pointed out to Aaron Sorkin, hey, you may not have noticed, but your entire cast is white, so that's a problem. And Sorkin said, like, yeah, you know, we didn't want to replace people, and we totally accept, like, we're glad that they pointed that out to us, and so we added in some roles. So I liked that they added in these two roles in, like, completely different spectrums. Like, you get Fitzwillis, who's totally established, like, he's at the top of his, like, literally, there is not a job higher than that except for, like, president. And then you get Charlie, who is, like, this new guy, like, you know, a bit unsure, like, kind of the lower rung, and I just love Charlie's character. Like, how can you not love Charlie? And he has a great introduction as well, where he's like, no, I'm pretty sure it's the wrong job. I'll just come back. I want to ride a bike. Like, that's fine. I'll do that. What did you guys think?
I didn't like that about him. I don't like Charlie.
Are you You'll serious?
Love Charlie later.
Oh my God, you love Charlie.
I feel like I'm on the opposite spectrum of everything.
You will love Charlie.
You will love Charlie later on. He is awesome.
Especially
he's too unsure of himself for me. Like, it was just annoying. Like, the amount of, like, I get at a certain point, like, oh, but are you sure? This gotta be a mistake. I, like, apply for the messenger job. I would get that, like, two times, maybe. But, like, the entire freaking time when he made it abundantly clear that he was recommended for a different job, I'm like, boy, get a grip. You got recommended for a really good job. Take it. Don't be so scared. Like, it was just annoying to me. Like, that's just my opinion, though. I did like him towards the end of the episode. It's like, sir, or like, was this the second episode or the third? I forgot what episode this was in, but he was like, sir, I left you alone for 2 minutes, and now you're down here all drunk. Like,
that's the next one.
Yeah, the fourth episode. Yeah, I love that part. But
yeah, I mean, it doesn't take him very long to feel like established in his role. Are you seriously saying, T, if someone was like, hey babe, do you want to just be assistant to the president, that would be great, you wouldn't be like, I think you might have made a mistake? Like,
no, I totally would. Yeah. But like, I feel like I don't know.
I feel like like Charlie develops a lot throughout the series, but I think it makes sense for his character. I guess you learn a little bit about his background here. Like, he looks after his sister, and his dad's like long gone, and his mum was a cop that was shot, you know, in the line. And you kind of, you learn more about his personal life, like he's put off going to college and stuff like that. So I think he's like the kind of guy that, he's not like that high achieving guy that goes out and does all these things, you know? So I think it like makes sense in his character that he would be like, no, I'm just this guy that looks after his sister and like whatever else, plays basketball on the weekends or, you know, whatever.
See, like, thinking about his character, I'm, like, starting to already, like him more. Yeah. I think initially...
Yes, converted!
When I saw him initially on the episode, I don't like the actor too much.
Oh, like, I think he'll grow on you. He's a really good character.
I'm so glad Christina's not here, because otherwise she'd be like, what?
Yeah.
But, yeah, I'm not, like, the biggest fan of the actor, but the character so far, yeah.
Yeah.
I like it.
Well, I mean... Yeah, I don't know. Charlie will play like a... Well, let's just say Charlie's sticking around. We'll put it that way.
He'll be like around for a while.
He ain't going nowhere. And he plays like quite an important role, especially towards the end of this series and the start of the next one. Teaser, if you know what I'm talking about. Yeah.
I love the president's line at the end of this episode, because we get a little bit of Charlie, like, you know, with Josh and trying to figure out how he got, you know, recommended for this job, like, whatever. But when he gets to actually meet the president, and, like, the president's real snooty and, like, is all... You can see that president is panicking about this, and so he acts kind of abrupt and harsh to him, and Charlie's kind of, like, taken aback, like, why would I want to take this job? Like, are you crazy? And then we get this whole line from the president, your mother was killed by a Western 38 revolver firing KTWs, or what are known as cop killer bullets. Now, we've not had a whole lot of success yet in banning that weapon or those bullets off the streets, but we're planning on taking a big whack at it when Congress comes back from recess. So, what do you say? Want to come help us out? And you can see the look on Charlie's face. He's just like, yeah, I do. Like, let's do this.
I totally just realized that that was, like, a lead-in for, like, the next episode. I missed that
completely.
Oh, my
God!
Yeah, it's continuation. Like the perfect lead-in, because the next episode we spend the entire thing talking about these boats that they need.
Yeah. Oh, wait a second. Can't skip there yet. I mean, I think that says a lot about the kind of dynamic that we'll see between the president and Charlie. Like, it's a very interesting dynamic, especially, how do I say this? When you think that the president has three daughters and no sons, and Charlie doesn't have a father. Like, it's not like totally a father-son dynamic that develops there, but it's something close.
Charlie
eventually
trusts and looks to the president for guidance.
Oh, completely.
And
yeah,
so in that respect
already
it's
now
the father-son thing, but
yeah,
it's more professional than that too.
Sure. I thought the interesting thing about Charlie, and I think actually Christina, we were talking about this with Christina, what did you guys think about the racial issues here? Like, they're talking about, should a black man be holding the president's bag and holding the door open for him? Like, did you guys think that is something that would be a problem now? If West Wing was made tomorrow, if they air this episode tomorrow, do you think they would have had to address that, or it would just be, like, a non-issue? Or do you think this is something that, like, really shows the time that it aired in?
I feel like it shows the time that it was aired in, because I feel like even if they even brought it up now, I think people would be like, well, why do you gotta mention that, huh? Like,
yeah.
Like, I feel like people would just be really pissed off, because, like, no one cares. Like I didn't think anything about it when he was getting interviewed for the job, and as soon as what's his name?
Josh?
Charlie? No.
Josh?
The other guy. Josh. Yeah, as soon as Josh was like, oh, yeah, but he's black, I was like, whoa, really? You know, like, it was a little surprising to me that it even mattered at all.
Well, but their issue was never, hey, we can't give him the job because he's black. It was, hey, is this going to look like we are placing him below us kind of thing? You know, like, but I personally think it was like Sorkin addressing the audience. Like, hey, we've got this kid, and yeah, he's not white, but yeah, he's the president's man, and that doesn't mean that we think any lesser of him, you know? Like, he even says, you know, Leo says to Josh, I hold the door open for the president. It's an honor. This is serious business. This isn't casting. We get the guy to do the job and take it from there. And it's like, well, it is casting, because you had to put in some black guys, and you chose him.
I love the you know what I mean? The whole thing with the casting problems and, like, the NAACP, like, commenting. I love that line so much more.
Yeah, I think I read when they first did the table read of this, like John Spencer said that line and everyone just cracked up and, like, just laughed for, like, 40 minutes or something. So, I don't know. I think that's
humor right there.
Yeah, I think that was kind of why it was thrown in. Honestly, like, I think even now it may be seen as an issue. Like, it's just the kind of thing that people latch onto. Like, we see it a lot in Newsroom with the women. Like, it's just that kind of thing where if you don't address it, then people will just kind of run with it, you know? And I'm sure that that would have happened at this time. Like, oh, well, why is he the assistant? Why isn't he the chief of staff? Why isn't he whatever? And it's like, well, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs is this guy, like, this other black guy, and he's, like, in charge of everything, and he just schooled the president. So, like, what's your problem? But I don't know. I thought it was, like, interesting that they raised it.
Yeah, I love Fitzwallace's reply to all of Leo's concerns when he's like, I've got some real honest-to-God battles to fight, Leo. I don't have time for the cosmetic ones. Because I think that's, like, the perfect response to that whole scenario is, like, there's not a problem with it. There shouldn't be a problem with it. You know, we're addressing it so that it doesn't become an issue.
Exactly.
That's that. Yeah. Like, let's just move on.
Yeah, I think that's definitely right. And honestly, I think if they'd done it today, they would have kind of thrown in a similar thing, but just maybe not quite so overt.
Mm-hmm.
But,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. Moving on from there, we also get quite a bit about Sam in this episode. There's...
Being a jerk.
The main point is that CJ finds out about Lori, and that doesn't exactly go over well.
He's my favorite.
You just like looking at him. That doesn't count.
Well, I like looking at him and listening to him and... in any plot involving him, so Sam's my favorite.
No, I think he's too preachy in this episode. And I think he's kind of preachy because he's kind of Sorkin's favorite at this point, and, like, Sorkin is kind of preachy.
I thought he was really funny when he was, like, when he pulled Josh aside, and he's like, why are you asking him this stuff? He's like, because I have to. Like, that was hysterical.
Yeah,
like,
but that's why I was like, Sam, you're so annoying. Like, of course you know, like, regardless of whether you think it's right or not, you still have to ask those questions. Like, that's part of the job. Like, Josh doesn't care if he's gay or if he's black or if he's whatever, but, like, you have to ask those questions. And I was like, this is probably the equivalent of, like, Charlie being, like, standing up and saying, no, I want to ride a bicycle. Every time Sam was like, you don't need to ask this stuff. Why do you need to know this stuff? Like, we're good people. Accept that. I was like, shut up, Sam. Like, seriously, stop talking. You're so annoying.
See, now, I always feel bad for Sam in this episode. I've watched it a million times. And I always end up feeling bad for him because everyone thinks that he's, you know, trying to save her and blah, blah, blah.
He is, though.
While he may be trying to do that, I think he really just likes her. And he wants to be her friend. And he knows that it's not the best thing for him to do. But he wants to.
Yeah, I see that. But I think it's just, like, it's idealistic to the point of naive.
Yeah.
Where he thinks, like, oh, well, it shouldn't matter, so it won't matter. It's like, honey, really? Like, a reporter is going to pick this up. It's politics. A reporter is going to be like, hey, one of the chief advisors to the president is best friends with a hooker. So let's run with that front page. You know,
let's see the headlines now. Like, you know,
Yeah. There'd be some alliteration in there, but it would basically be saying that. And it's like, you just kind of want to shake him and be like, do you seriously not get it? Like, no matter what you think, you might be a better person. CJ even is like, I don't care what it is. I care what it looks like. And that's really, like, the whole point. Like, no matter how much they're, like, idealistic and above it all, that doesn't mean that other people aren't going to call it out for whatever they think it is. You know? And I was just like, Sam, really? You're like, you know this stuff. You're not, you know, like, you're in politics. You understand how this works. I don't know. Just, it, like, drives me crazy. But, I mean, I guess the one good thing about this, this storyline is another new character of Danny, who's the reporter, Tarek, if you don't know who I'm talking about.
It's like, what? Who?
Yeah. Danny, he's the reporter who like warned CJ that they have the story. And also I love Alice and Jenny and like all of this stuff. She's amazing. So Danny is like a recurring character who comes back like every few episodes in the press room. There's a few reporters that like you see every so often. But I like how it kind of establishes the relationship of Danny and CJ. Like you can tell at this point already, it's more than just like reporter and press secretary because she's like, I really don't think you should run with that story. And he's like, all right, no worries. Like, you know, and then she's like, all right, I'll give you a tip. Like, let's go.
Yeah, he's like, I'm being a good guy. And she's like, yeah, I know. Here you go. Here's a tip. Like,
yeah, here's your award. But yeah, I mean, I love Danny so much.
Does Danny come back later in the season?
Yeah, in a few seasons, yeah.
You'll see more of Danny, that's for sure.
And CJ.
I feel like such a noob.
Yeah, well, it's fun to laugh at your, like, lack of knowledge. I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, oh, man. We also get more of Josh and Donna. I love that in this episode we see that Josh's role in the West Wing is more domestic and he does more with like Senate and Congress and, you know, is working with them. And so when international crises come up, he's just sitting around with nothing to do.
Yeah, that's like very typical of Josh.
Okay. Is is Josh and Donna a thing? Because you guys keep referencing to them, and you're like, oh my god, Josh, Donna, they're like, they so have a thing. But like, when I watch it, I don't see anything happening.
Well, no,
them.
They're
like,
just...
All I see are like two people just like chatting and being friends.
Yeah, but when you watch it, I mean, even... Okay, when I watched it for the first time, I always thought like, oh, like those two actors have really good chemistry. Like they seem
well,
like
yeah,
they
definitely
get
do.
On really well, and like, it's very, like, it's kind of like a flirty, jokey boss-assistant relationship, you know? And there's not necessarily anything else there, but it's not just like, hey, you're my boss. Hey, I, like, get your coffee and write up your memos kind of thing. Like, the Josh and the Donna thing is, like, a very drawn-out, like it's the... It's, I want to say it's like Jim and Maggie over like 7 seasons
yeah.
of like
if
frustration.
You take what's happened between Jim and Maggie in one season and stretch it over 7, that's basically
yeah.
Josh and Donna.
But without the, without all
without,
of the actual,
Maggie.
Well, yeah, without being really annoying,
yeah.
without the like overt, like sexual tones to it. Like Josh and Donna, when the show aired, was a thing that fans were always like, when are they going to get together? When are they going to get together? You know, like it wasn't necessarily a thing that was happening, but it was kind of like a fan canon thing that they would like hoping for it to happen. And I just think, I mean, regardless of what their relationship is, whether it's like a sexual or romantic or platonic relationship, I just think they're really cute together. And like their scenes are always so funny. And
I love
yeah.
the Josh and Donna stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the actress that plays Donna, she has such a great like comic timing. She's so deadpan. Like, she's like, well, the first time there was someone in your office, I didn't know. And the second time, I didn't care that much. So, you know, it's like...
And I love that Donna kind of represents us. Like,
yeah.
she doesn't necessarily get everything the first time Josh says it. So sometimes she makes him explain it. And I love that.
And then we know what's happening as well. Yay!
Yay! Yeah, especially when it gets into crazy, like, policy
other
stuff
things.
That
yeah.
we don't necessarily... hear or to talk about all the time. It's really nice to kind of have someone say yeah, I don't understand that, like,
yeah,
clear it up for me.
Exactly. But then in comparison to the Josh and Donna scenes, which are like adorable and like lots of chemistry and blah blah blah, we get the Mandy and Josh scene, which is awkward and annoying and unnecessary.
I like Mandy so much.
Oh, you are so on the wrong tree. You are barking up the wrong tree.
I love her attitude. I love it.
But like, Don't you feel like when you're watching those scenes, like, how would these characters ever be in a relationship together? Like, how
no,
would that have ever
yeah.
worked? I can't, I just can't say it. I just think it was, like, weird casting.
Yeah, I agree.
You know?
That's the, watching it this time especially, I got zero chemistry between them. Like, and I've never, the first time I watched it, I was kind of younger, and I didn't even connect that I was supposed to remember that they had dated. Like, it didn't even occur to me.
Oh,
and
okay.
And it's because I just never got the chemistry between the characters.
Yeah, I just think it's weird. I just feel like they're trying to... Like, in the first season, they're really trying to force this, like, Josh-Mandy thing, and it really just isn't working, and they realize that, and then they get rid of Mandy. Spoilers! but let's not talk about her anymore, because it just makes me frustrated.
So we also get Toby's storyline, where he is just absolutely outraged by... some comments that are being made by another Democrat. The quote that I love. Apparently, the people in Bert's district are so patriotic that if the President of the United States were to show up, they'd kill him. That, it's Leo's
like,
line, but that,
yeah.
like, describes the whole situation to a T, and Toby just gets pissed.
I love Toby. Like, I know that's an unpopular opinion, but... He's just, it's so funny. Like, this entire episode, he's basically walking around with, like, cartoon smoke, like, coming out of his ears. You know? Like, he's just so mad, like, all the time. And Richard Schiff is just so funny. Like, I know I'm meant to be like, oh, that's weird. Like, why would someone say that about the president? But I'm just like, you're so funny, Toby. I love you so much. So, maybe not the correct response, but I don't know. It's like a... Toby is often, like, the comedy at his expense, so, like, the kind
he's
of darker
so the,
comedy.
He's the lovable grouch.
Oh, but definitely,
he's
yeah.
He's so grouchy about everything, but it's so adorable how mad he gets.
Exactly.
I particularly love him in the fourth episode.
Yeah, yeah. Well, speaking of, let's jump into that one, because I think we've basically
let's jump right on in wrapped there. That up. So, the fourth episode, Five Votes Down, the main plot is about this gun control bill that we heard about in the third episode, especially towards the end when the president was talking to Charlie about, you know, let's, you know, do you want to come help us out? We're going to take a real shot at guns. The biggest part of this is that the president gives this address, basically guaranteeing it, and then they find out that they lost five votes, and the rest of this episode is them trying to get those votes back.
Yeah, and to go on from what you were saying from the first episode, I like how this really shows off Josh's strengths. Like, this is what Josh does well. You know, within the first, like, half of the episode, he's gone out and he's got back four votes already because he can manipulate domestic politics and he can, like, he's incredibly persuasive and he's kind of like the little henchman that, like, runs around and does the dirty work behind the scenes. And I think it's, like, a good contrast from the last, like these two episodes kind of go together really well, I think, and, like, that's just one of the ways.
Yeah, his whole little line, the president doesn't hold a grudge, that's what he pays me for. Like, that's exactly his role in the West Wing.
Exactly, yeah.
Is he's the muscle that kind of shows up and says, well, the president's not going to tell you this, but I'll tell you, you're being an ass. Like, yeah.
Yeah, and I like that it shows, like, he's really good at his job. Like, you kind of think from the first one, what does Josh actually do? Like, what is he here for? But then in this next one, they're like, Leo's like, all right, get them back. Like, find out what's happening. And Josh is on it. And he, like, has all his different tactics. But meanwhile, how much do you hate that congressman that's like, oh, let's play chess. Like, don't push me around. I want a photo opportunity. You're like, get over yourself.
He's ridiculously young and stupid.
Yeah. Weren't you just thinking, like, how did this guy get elected? Like,
yeah. Like, oh my god. Like, as soon as I saw him with all of his mates and he was like, sup, dude? I was like, what? Like, really? Like, what? That's not a congressman.
Yeah. Right. He's like, this isn't a frat house.
Here you go.
Yeah. I mean... Yeah, I guess it's just like, hey, all kinds of people get elected, and he's like meant to be all buddy-buddy with Josh. I mean, I just thought that was so stupid. He's like, oh yeah, I'm not going to vote for this like really important gun reform bill because like I feel like you're taking me for granted. Like, we're not in a relationship, you know. That's not how this works.
Like, how about you throw a bigger temper tantrum?
Yeah, exactly.
I love the way he said it. It was like, you're voting down a measure that would restrict the sale of deadly weapons because nobody invited you to the cool kids table.
Yeah. And he's like, it's awesome. Got your attention. It's like, seriously.
It's like, I'm so sick of Congress I could vomit.
Yeah.
It's so great.
You like want to slap slap him across the face. But I mean, when you see the scene with him and Josh, it just makes you love Josh so much more.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I guess it does its job if that's what it's what it's trying to do. I mean, everything makes me love Josh because I'm such a Josh fan. I'm on the Josh bandwagon. You guys can keep your Rob Lowe.
Oh, I love Josh too. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
So besides that, I mean, after they get those four votes back, we find out that they still need the last one. So Leo goes out to try and convince someone else, and that doesn't really work out. So they end up having to go to Hoynes.
That was such a fail. That, like, the way Leo tried to convince him, like, he was like, hey, so a whole bunch of black people are using these guns, you know, we want to get them safe. You know, we're going to help secure these black men's lives. And he's like, don't talk to me about the lives of black men. You just failed.
Yeah. And I enjoyed that. But I also like how Leo, like, obviously, Leo was never going to convince that guy, which just shows how desperate he was not to go and talk to Hoynes. Like, he really just doesn't want to rely on him. He doesn't want to trust, well, he doesn't trust him. You know, there's, like, this huge disconnect between, like, I think between Leo and Hoynes, and maybe even more so than the president and Hoynes. And so far, we haven't seen the president and Hoynes in, like, these first four episodes, but we've seen Leo and the vice president a few times, and every time we see them, it's like, these guys really don't like each other, which is more interesting when you, like, get the kind of reveals about other things they may have in common, but Yeah, it's interesting.
I do like that even with all the conflict that's in the episode between the two, like, you can feel a lot of the tension between Leo and Hoynes.
Yeah.
At the end, when everything's kind of falling apart for Leo, like, his personal life is basically collapsing in front of him, Hoynes, like, is understanding. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, he draws him back in and is like, Leo, you know, like, sit down. You know, we find out that they both are alcoholics, and so Hoynes then tells Leo and invites him to his weekly meeting that he houses in the basement of the White House secretly, which is, you know, it's nice to see that while they might professionally have completely, you know, they don't work together well at all, it's nice to see that they can personally, you know, kind of get together and support each other.
Yeah, and I think the inclusion of the alcoholics plotline is really interesting. Like, this obviously comes back a few times, Kristen, you know what I'm talking about. But, you know, to throw this in so early, I think Sorkin said in an interview that he knows, like, you know, he would be surprised if there isn't an AA meeting within, like, 5 miles of you, wherever you are, like, I guess in America, because they're so common.
Mm-hmm.
But the only people that can't attend them are, like, airline pilots and surgeons and judges, and he assumes, like, politicians, because how could a politician turn up to an AA meeting without it getting out somehow? And it, like, it makes sense. And I mean, with all of the, like, public servants that are in government, there, of course, there are going to be some people that have, like, substance abuse problems, like, you know, it's like
alcohol. Yeah,
exactly. It's like, it's kind of guaranteed. So it's like, it was interesting to, like, throw this in so early. And I think it makes you, like, maybe it gives some more empathy to Hoynes as a character, because you, like, really don't like him, but then you see, like, oh, he's got this huge thing in common with Leo, and, like, we like Leo, so maybe Hoynes isn't so bad.
See, that's exactly how I felt. Like, as soon as he's like, oh, are you okay? I was like, oh, he has a heart.
Yeah.
It's so sweet. And then as soon as he's like, oh, we gonna think Vice President Hoynes for all the bills, I'm like, are you serious? Like, really?
Yeah, Hoynes is an interesting character, because he is, like, really cutthroat as a politician, but, like, on the personal side, I mean, he goes, like, up and down, but he kind of has this weird, like, kinship with Leo. He really doesn't like the president at all. But yeah, like, that's, I think this episode basically, like, rounds out his character. Like, you see all the different sides of Hoynes in this episode.
I really can't wait to find out how the hell he got elected to be his vice president if he doesn't like the man.
Well, you will find out in the second series. Yeah. It is very interesting.
I like that this kind of harkens back to that whole thing with Sam last episode, with the higher standard, lower standard thing.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't, you know, he doesn't mind being held to a higher standard, but hates being held to a lower one, and that all works with this episode, too, and the whole alcoholic storyline, because being, you know, a recovering alcoholic doesn't mean that you can't function or do your job, but if that were to get out for either one of these characters, they'd be in trouble.
Like, yeah.
That's a huge problem in the eyes of the public, where them going to meetings is good because they'd be getting treatment. So, you know, like, I love that it kind of continues. We continue to see more of that.
Yeah, it's definitely that whole thing. Like, it's just what it looks like. It's all about the public perception. And I think that's, like, an interesting contrast with the sort of the personal perception that we have, which is in Leo's marriage, which is, like, just completely falls apart in this episode. And actually, Kristen, I had totally forgotten that Leo was married at some point.
Yeah, you do,
I was
though.
Like, oh, it's, Leo's
I
wife.
I forgot about his wife for
she's only
for
in,
time.
Like, 5 scenes in the entire thing.
Yeah.
And then she's mentioned by name a couple times, and, like, you're like, oh, yeah, Leo's ex-wife.
Especially with Mallory, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, it's interesting. Like, he has this whole, he has this secret thing, but that his AA thing is still kind of a work thing, you know, and he's, like, putting all this time into, like, his work things, and he completely forgets about, like, his anniversary, and he, like, tries to make it up to her, and he says to her, and, like, I thought it was a brave thing of Sorkin to, like, throw in there, to have a character be, like, to his wife or his partner or whoever, like, no, what I'm doing is more important. Like, have you ever heard of, like, more idealistic, more like preachy line in a TV show in your life? I doubt it.
It is more important than my marriage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like right now it is more important. And you're like, okay, I get it. Like working for the president is a big deal. Thanks, Sorkin. But yeah, I'm, and it shows like the repercussions for these characters as well. Like it's not all easy. You know, they're like dealing with long-term things, and they're dealing with things like this in their personal life, and you know, things outside that one building that the entire show is shot in. So
yeah, the lighter side of this episode is definitely the financial disclosure reports.
Oh yeah,
it gives us little zingers like the Josh's smoker's jacket thing with Donna, which is hilarious.
Oh yeah, from his like ex-girlfriend or whoever.
Yeah,
I totally love that part. That part was like amazing.
It's just funny, like with that and the, I forget, it was the smoking jacket and then like a cravat or something.
Oh yeah,
well,
like the cigar thing or something. I can't even remember, but like I like how CJ does little like, next up we'll have Josh Lyman, and it's like a, you know, her little segments of all of the different ridiculousness, because they're like, psst, CJ, maybe distract the press with this so they don't know about the other stuff.
Yeah. And, I love that we get the introduction of Josh's like fan club in this too.
Oh yeah,
from the speech, like when they're like standing there and they're like, we love you, Josh, like I love all of that. And then we also get it towards the end here where she's like, they really love you.
Yeah.
I loved CJ's lines. Like, it'd help if you didn't know him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We also get some bits about Toby's financial disclosure, which I have to tell you, this is probably one of my favorite, like, Toby storylines, because it makes him so frustrated because he doesn't get what happened, and yet he has to be punished for it. And it just elicits some really, really great responses from Toby.
Yeah.
It's gotta suck for that guy. Like, oh man, like, you legitimately just do something on coincidence, and people are like, oh my god, you just did a major felony, and you're like, oh crap.
Yeah, and that's that whole thing again about, like, it's what it looks like, you know?
Not fair.
Oh no, you feel so bad for Toby, but, like, that's, Toby, things in Toby's life don't go according to plan. Like, just generally, Toby is not the guy who like everything works out for. That would be Sam. Like, yeah. Toby is like the guy that just things go wrong for him and you kind of feel bad, but at the same time it's really funny, you know. But yeah, oh, the more we talk about these episodes, the more I think they're like such a good little pair that goes together, like so many connections between them.
We also get, which is one of my favorite scenes of the entire series, with the president being high on painkillers.
Best part ever.
So funny.
Oh my gosh.
Martin Sheen plays it so well, and it's just so ridiculous. I love that whole scene. It's one of my absolute favorites.
When I was watching that scene, I was kind of like, I feel like Martin Sheen might have some experience with this. Like,
this might not be so hard for him.
Doesn't seem like acting.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
No, yeah. That was hilarious.
That whole bit with Charlie, Mr. President, I left you alone for 2 minutes. Like.
Yeah.
And he snuck his way down to the West Wing. Like, it's just so funny.
Exactly.
I like how he was like, I can focus. I can. My mind is set.
Yeah.
And he's like, wait. What was I just talking about?
And it even. It even shows, like, even, like, now Charlie is, like, standing up to him and being like, hey, what are you doing? So, you know, he's already becoming, like, more comfortable. I think, like, you feel like in this episode, Charlie has kind of been doing the job for a little while now. Like, this isn't something that's happened the next day. So he's, like, more comfortable in himself, even though they obviously follow on from each other. I don't think it's like, hey, Charlie, we're gonna put this bill through. And then the next day they're like, hey, we've put this bill through. Like, I think there's a bit more of a time lapse.
Well, that pretty much wraps up episode 4. So we did get a comment on our Twitter account that we wanted to make sure to pass on to you guys. Mario Padilla tweeted at Sorkin Series, sadly, I can't go at the pace the podcast is going. Once I start, I can't stop. I'm already halfway through season 1. And I definitely understand. I find myself running forward, watching a bunch, and then coming back and watching the two episodes we have to talk about.
Yeah, I do that too.
I've just been distracted by Teen Wolf. There are too many attractive people in that show for me to watch West Wing in comparison.
You need a focus. You need like a West Wing boot camp.
I need to stop watching it the night before we record. Yeah.
Seriously. If we were in the same country, I would like sit you down in front of your TV. I might just like send you a lot of text messages and just make sure
that you do
it.
If we were in the same country, we'd be getting drunk and not watching West Wing.
We could do both. I don't see a problem with that. Yeah.
All right. So, well, I guess that's it for the episode. But don't forget to go on the forums. I'm like the forum advocate on like every podcast I've been on. I'm like, forums.
Well, yeah, because you made them.
You're your baby.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So,
everyone go and support Tarek on the forums because he made them, and he'll be sad if you don't go and talk about West Wing on them.
Please, we don't even have a West Wing or a Sorkin series topic up, so if you guys want to talk about West Wing or any of the stuff that we've talked about on the Sorkin series, go ahead and make a topic in our podcast forum, and we'll be more than happy to chat with you guys about it.
Yeah, it's a lot easier than like going back and forth over Twitter as well.
Exactly. This way you'll have one place where you can see all of your replies.
Exactly.
And you don't have to worry about getting lost.
Make sure you can also reach us at Sorkin Series on Twitter or at SorkinSeries@Hyperbole.com. And please rate us on iTunes. We love seeing the comments and such, so don't forget to do that as well. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah, next we'll be back in a fortnight or whatever you people call it, 2 weeks, with episodes 5 and 6, which are The Crackpots and These Women, which is like one of the best episodes of season 1.
One
so everyone get excited. And Mr. Wills of Ohio is
also
number.
Really good.
Yeah, both two really good episodes. So get on them. Make sure you watch them. You know, if you watch them sometime in the next week, then you have plenty of time to contact us and let us know what you think, and we can discuss your feedback on our next episode.
Sounds good. All right. See you all later. Bye.
Bye. Bye.